This is to Satsarup, 26 October 1969. I have duly made corrections on the Ishopanishad glossary you have enclosed, and I shall send it to Brahmananda as requested by you. I want that in all our books, magazines, and other writings, the scholarly presentation be given in all instances. So far, every Sanskrit word there must be the appropriate spelling and diacritic marks. This is to Brahmananda, the 27th of October. Regarding Ishopanishads, enclosed, please find the glossary that Satsarup has sent to me for making corrections. From now on, all our writings should be presented in a scholarly manner, so all spelling and diacritical marks must be done correctly. I have already sent you the corrected page, which you sent me, and now the glossary is also corrected. I do not think there is any necessity for any dedication on Ishopanishad, because it is a small book. So we're seeing here how Prabhupada wanted his books translated in a very scholarly way, because he wanted to show that we are not just, you know, sentimentalists. We do everything in, according to the most expert way of presentation, diacritical marks and proper spelling, everything. So people will appreciate. When, especially people in the scholarly worlds, they usually always look for finding some discrepancies or some faults, and so that's their mindset. So I wanted to present it in the most perfect way. This is to Satsarup, November 14th. So far as Krishna book is concerned, I understand that you did not keep any copy of the manuscript. Generally, it is the custom to make at least 4 copies. So how is it that you have neglected this? In the absence of the second copy, it is risky to send you our copy in the mail. Therefore, I am personally glancing over and putting the diacritical marks in the Sanskrit words. Besides that, one respectable friend has promised to get this printed immediately. This is to Brahmananda, the 10th of December. Regarding Back to Godhead magazine, I am so glad that you are printing 50,000 copies henceforth. I have received also your press management report, so the only thing to be amended there is that all books especially must be twice edited, once by Satcharupa and once by Hayagriva. In every publication house, all printing matters are edited at least 3 times, so we should be very much careful about grammatical and printing mistakes. That will mar the prestige of the press and the institution. It's very important. It was an experience. I was reading one book that was translated by one of our god brothers who did a translation. And in the foreword and the acknowledgments, he congratulates a number of persons for working on the book, for editing, proofreading, and he gives a wonderful praise to one, a congregational member or somebody who was not involved, for doing such wonderful proofreading and editing work. So then I started to read the book. It was amazing how many mistakes I found. Words were misspelled. That was the main thing, misspelled words. And even letters were left out. So, you know, I was thinking he was giving so much praise to this person, but it's all wrong. Every page was something that was a mistake. So Prabhupada wanted us to, you know, to be first class in presenting his books. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any comments or questions on this little topic here? Okay, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 24th chapter, 54th verse. This is entitled the Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Purushaḥ Uptavantam, being addressed by Maharaj Satyavrata. Nirpatim, unto the King. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Adipurusha, the original person. Matsyarupi, who had assumed the form of a fish. Mahaambodo, in that water of inundation. Viharan, while moving. Tatva Abhavit, explain the absolute truth. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Satyavrata had thus prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a fish, the Lord, while moving in the water of inundation, explained to him the absolute truth. So there's no purport. Text 55. Purana samhitam divyam sakya yogam priyavatim satyavratasya rajasir atmabhuyam asheshataha. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thus explained to King Satyavrata the spiritual science known as Sankhya Yoga, the science by which one distinguishes between matter and spirit, in other words, Bhakti Yoga, along with the instructions contained in the Puranas and the Samhitas. The Lord explained himself in all these literatures. Text 56. Asrao sedrushibhi sakam atmatatvam asamsayam navyasino bhagavata proktam brahma sanatanam. Translation. While sitting in the boat, King Satyavrata, accompanied by the great saintly persons, listened to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in regard to self-realization. These instructions were all from the eternal Vedic literature. Thus the king and sages had no doubt about the absolute truth. Text 57. Atita palaya paya utitaya savedase hatvam suram hayagrivam vedapatya haradarahi. Translation. At the end of the last inundation, during the period of Swayambhuvamani, the Supreme Personality of Godhead killed a demon named Hayagriva and delivered all the Vedic literatures to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleeping. That actually, there's two incidents of the Vedic literatures being stolen, once by the, what is it? I agree, and then there was Madhava and Kaitava, two demons that tried to steal the Vedic literatures also. Text 58. Satu Satyavrato Raja Jnana Vijnana Samyutaha Vishnu Pasadat Kalpesmin Asit Vaiva Svato Manuhu. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. King Satyavrata was illuminated with all Vedic knowledge by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, and in this period he has now taken birth as Vaivishvata Manu, the son of the sun god. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this verdict that Satyavrata appeared in the Chakshush Manvantara. When the Chakshush Manvantara ended, the period of Vaivishvata Manu began. By the grace of Lord Vishnu, Satyavrata received instructions from the second fish incarnation and thus was enlightened in all spiritual knowledge. Umigyanti Virandasya Ginajana Savakaya Chaksu Unvilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadatikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So he gives class tomorrow. There's three verses left, and the last one, only the last one has a purport, so that'll finish up the pastime and also finish the eighth canto. Begin the ninth canto, starting on Thursday. So here, and we're getting to the very conclusion, summing up the details of this particular pastime. By the mercy of the Lord, the king, Satyavrata, received knowledge, Vedic knowledge. And he took birth again as Vaivishvata Manu, the son of the sun god. So Satyavrata Muni was extremely blessed and fortunate to not only to get the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and a most wonderful feature, the Lord appears as a fish. But he's not a fish. In fact, he appears as a tortoise, but he's not a tortoise. He appears as a dwarf, but he's not a dwarf. The Lord appears, actually, it's mentioned in the scriptures, that the Lord appears in practically all of the 8,400,000 species of life in order to elevate that particular species to a higher stage of existence. So here we see that the Lord takes birth as a fish, but he's not a fish. If somebody thinks that he's a fish, then that is what is called poor fund of knowledge, or seeing according to one's limited understanding. Krishna is unlimited, and everything about the Lord is unlimited. Advaitam, Achyuti, Anadi, Anantarupa. Krishna is unlimited, and all his forms are also unlimited. So he can appear any one of his transcendental forms, but still he remains this one Supreme Personality of God, original and inexhaustible. And he appears to all these forms simply to enlighten his devotees and to attract them towards him in the most loving devotional service. So sometimes we see that we are attracted to Krishna in different ways. Some of us are attracted to Krishna as maybe Jagannath, some of us as Lord Nityaitanya, maybe even some of us as Lord Nisrinadeva. Of course, the karmis are not so attracted to Lord Nisrinadeva because he comes to really destroy them, all of them. So everyone is attracted in different ways. Sometimes we see little children are also attracted to the Lord in a certain way. They like Ram. Why don't children like Ram? Because he's fighting with bows and arrows, and he's killing so many demons, and he's just annihilating unlimited armies of Rakshasas, and there's big fights and blood and so much violence. And little kids, they like that, right? When you were a little kid, right? You didn't go around doing loving sports. You were just beating each other up. You see the little children in the temple here, the boy and the girl. What are they doing? They just punch each other all the time. Right? That's what little children do. But of course, if we expose them to, you know, the general mass of media with all its violence, and then they become more violent. But we dovetail that propensity for fighting by giving them transcendental pastimes of Ram or even Krishna killing so many demons. You see, if you compare the fighting propensity of Krishna compared to anyone, no one can match up to Krishna's fighting propensity. The Hollywood movies and all the cinemas and with all their sound effects and all their fantastic lightings and all their imagination, they try to come up with all kinds of wars, and some Star Wars, and all these mystical types of things. But actually, compared to Krishna's Leela, they're just quite puny attempts to imitate something. Look what Krishna did to Jarasandha. God, Jarasandha came 17 times to fight with Krishna, and each time Krishna annihilated his entire army. And it says that in these battles there were like rivers of blood. Rivers. And in those rivers there were heads and bodies, arms floating in the rivers. Just like tortoises and islands and sharks. They're described like that in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Srimad Bhagavatam describing Krishna's violence. So I mean, when Krishna kills, he really does a good job. Can you imagine trying to make a movie out of that? They would never be able to do it. They can't. Because Krishna, when Krishna does something, no one can compare to Krishna. No one can imitate his attempts to do anything. So he's the best in all categories. So Krishna comes in various incarnations. Pravitranayam saranam vinasanaya shudhiskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To annihilate. But Krishna has also come now in this age. He's come in his form as the holy name. It's explained that there are two things. There are Shastra and Shastra. Shastra and Shastra. Shastra means scripture, and Shastra means weapon. Means weapon. So sometimes the holy name is called Shastra, which means that it is the form of the Lord which appears in this age to kill the demons. Of course, we have the story of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda giving the mercy of the holy name to Jagannatha Madai. When Lord Nityananda wanted to bring Lord Chaitanya's mercy to the most fallen and degraded, abominable persons, he found Jagannatha Madai. And he was thinking, if I can make these two low-class drunkards devotees, and then Lord Chaitanya will be glorified throughout the universe. Everyone will recognize his supreme mercy and all mercy. This was Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda's thought. Of course, Haridas Thakur, who had been given the service of associating with Lord Nityananda, going out together every day and preaching, he didn't like the idea so much. It's not that he wasn't so merciful, but the first day when they came and they saw Jagai and Madai there, Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur came up and he said, "My dear fellows, why don't you stop this nonsense and take up the chanting of the holy names of the Lord?" And these two personalities were so intoxicated and so violent by nature that they became so angry, and in their drunken state they started to chase after Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. So they ran. They ran away. And while they were running, of course, Nityananda and Haridas were laughing. And then these two big, fat drunkards, they couldn't catch Lord Nityananda. They're too fat and drunk. And Lord Nityananda Haridas was just running away laughing. But then Haridas Thakur said to Lord Nityananda, I've been beaten through 22 marketplaces. But now that I'm associating with you, I don't know what my destiny will be. You are simply a madman. trying to make these two persons Krishna conscious. But the next day they went back again. Of course, when Haridas Thakur told Lord Chaitanya what had happened, Advaita Acharya was there. He said, yes, this is the nature of a drunkard. Drunkards like to associate with other drunkards. And Lord Nityananda, he's drunk. He's a drunkard. And Jagan Mari is also drunkards, but different kinds of drunkards. Lord Nityananda is drunk on love of God. So the next day he went back again. And this time Mari picked up a broken pot, which was a wine pot, and he threw it and hit the head of Lord Nityananda, and his head started to bleed. When that happened, all the devotees who were around, they ran to Lord Chaitanya and said, Lord Nityananda is in trouble. This Madai has caused great harm to Lord Nityananda. So Lord Chaitanya, he came. And when he saw the scene, he became so mad. It's like he became like the fire of devastation at the end of the universe. He's ready to destroy the entire creation. And he immediately summoned his Sudarshan Chakra. Immediately the chakra came. Called Chakra Chakra. And it came. And the chakra was spinning, yes, my Lord, what do you want me to do? But then Lord Nityananda saw what was happening, and he said, no, my Lord. Actually, please forgive them. Lord Nityananda didn't at all take offense. Even though he was hit in the head and he was in great pain, didn't at all take offense. Lord Chaitanya was ready to kill them. He said, my dear Lord, in this age you have come to kill their mentalities, not to kill their bodies. If we were to simply kill the demons in this age, like you did in your previous ages as Krishna, there would be nobody left to preach to. Because everybody in this age is of Jagai and Madai. It's a fact. Practically everybody gets intoxicated now. We don't have to go into a detailed description of today's world. Because all you have to do is pick up the newspapers, right? On the front headlines of the newspapers, bombs are going off, people are shooting each other, right? I just noticed the headlines of the Sunday newspaper a couple days ago. Big wars going on in the Middle East. It's just everywhere these things are happening. This is the age of quarrel. This is the age of hypocrisy. It's the age of violence. It's a very difficult age. Very difficult time. So the Lord has come in the form of His holy name. Kali Kalaya Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar. The holy name of Krishna is actually Krishna Himself. And it's meant to kill, not the body, but kill the demoniac mentality, to purify the consciousness. What are the demons? What are the demons? The demons are, Krishna explains, Kama Esha, Kloda Esha, Rajaguna Samu Baha, Baha, Mahashano, Mahapapam, Vidyena Viha, Varinam. It is lust, and lust only, which comes in contact with the material mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful activity of this world. So Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna, declares that lust is that demon, which is all, in Bhagavad Gita there's a depiction of lust. It's a big fiery demon And anything that comes in contact with this fiery demon is being consumed by this fire. So lust is a very all-powerful demon, which is simply consuming the minds and hearts of the living entities in this age. People are lusty after each other, they're lusty after food, they're lusty after money, they're lusty after material possessions. They're just one of so many things, and they're never satisfied. Never satisfied. You get more, and the more you get, the more you want. Because you're never satisfied with what you get. And you always think that if I have more, I'll be satisfied. So the whole mindset is to accumulate more, to experience more, right? How many girlfriends can you have? How many boyfriends can you have? How many cans of beer you can drink? And the one who drinks the most beer, he's considered the hero. Of course, they have to scrape him off the floor later on. But these are the things that go on as considered to be achievements in the material society. How much money can you have? You have so much money, you can't even think of what to do with it. Bill Gates doesn't even know how to spend his money. He's got so much money. Right. And everybody, oh, Bill Gates. It's like when you chant Bill Gates' name, it's like chanting the Maha Mantra. Right? Oh, everybody becomes awe and reverence. Right? And what is his ability? The ability to manipulate the material energy in order to somehow or other bring Lakshmi to his possession. Of course, it's all temporary, but everyone thinks it's so great. So more money you have, more possessions you have. There's one man, he's cornered the silver market in the world. He's getting all the silver that can be gotten, and he's buying it all up. He's considered to be a very intelligent man, very shrewd person, sought after by business people as being very cunning in how to do things. Prabhupada says business is cheating. To be a business person means to be a big cheater, that's all. The more successful you are in business, the bigger a cheater you are, that's all. The Vedic culture, there's one scripture, it's called the Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita explains that if you do business, you are allowed to make 25% profit, no more. That's it. You can only make 25% profit. Enough to maintain yourself and enough to make some living expenses. If you make more than 25% profit, you're meant to put that and give that away. And what today's society is 100%, 200%, 500% profit, right? The more you can jack up the price to get people to buy the item, the more you're considered to be a good businessman. You become expert in business. But what are you? You're simply an exporter. You're a cheater, and you're considered to be important. So this is Kali Yuga. This is Kali Yuga. So lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, pride, arrogance, these are all demons. When Krishna came, He killed the demon of pride. He killed the demon of lust. He killed the demon of anger. He killed the demon of envy. He killed the demon of greed. And he killed the demon of illusion. Jai and Vijay took 6 births. 3 Jai and 3 Vijay. What was the first birth? Who knows the first set of births? Haranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And what was Hiranyaksha's main activity? What was he doing? He was hoarding gold. So he was the demon of greed. He was so greedy that he was just simply exploiting the world for as much gold as he could get. So much so that the earth lost its balance in the cosmic orbit and fell into the bottom of the universe, into the Garbhodaksha Ocean. So much so that the Lord personally came at Varaha to lift the earth out of the ocean and to kill the demon. So he was a demon of greed. And he was so greedy he didn't even care about what would happen to other people as long as he could satisfy his greed. Right? We see in today's world, people are so greedy that they don't care. They kill each other simply to get material possessions, to get more money. Relatives, sometimes they poison their family members so they die so they can get their inheritances, right? There was one story where one famous cartoonist, maybe some of you heard of him, his name was Walt Disney. You heard of Walt Disney? Everybody? Have you heard of Walt Disney? No. Not in Russia, I don't think they have Walt Disney in Russia. Huh? Mickey Mouse. Everybody knows Mickey Mouse. So Walt Disney, he was a famous cartoonist. And what was his thing? That he wanted to live forever. And he was rich. He was a multi-millionaire. So before he died, he said to the scientists that you freeze my body. They have this thing where there's a machine, you can freeze the body after the body is dead and doesn't decompose. And then he said, when you find the secret of life, because the scientists were trying to experiment, you will find that ingredient, which is the secret of life, and then people will be able to live eternally. He said, when you find that, then you can, you know, give me that and then I will come back to life. So he was serious. He paid large sums of money to these people. They froze his body. But what happened was, his relatives, some were saying, well, he's dead. Others were saying, no, he's not dead. He's going to come back. So they were fighting over the inheritance. Some were saying, he's dead, we want the money. Others were saying, no, he's not dead, he's going to come back, therefore it's not your money. So what happened? One day, when nobody was around, they snuck into the room where his body was being frozen and they pulled the plug on the machine. So much for Walt Disney. So, of course, it's a useless affair. You see how relatives are. They're so greedy. It's not their money in the first place. But they want it. They're willing to do anything to get money. And people do anything to get material possessions. So Hiranyaksha is like that. So Krishna came in the form of Varaha and killed the demon of greed. What was the next demon? Now who came after Hiranyaksha? Hiranyakashipu. What was Hiranyakashipu's qualification? Well, huh? Pride. Arrogance. Arrogance and pride. He was so proud and so arrogant, he was saying that there is no one who is great as I am. I am the greatest of all great. And when his little son, Prahlad Maharaj, the pure devotee of the Lord, said, actually, twirling it around like a madman, the name of the Lord would just cause him great anger. But he was thinking, there is no one as great as me. Everyone should worship me. He had all the demigods worshiping him, except Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Even Narada Muni, when Narada Muni was doing a job, he was playing a role. But all the demigods in the higher planets, they were so afraid of Hiranyakashipu that when he would simply lift up his eyebrows, the entire heavenly planets would shake in fear. He was so powerful. So he was thinking, there is no one as great as me. He was so arrogant. And Krishna came, fulfilled all the promises of Lord Brahma, and killed the demon of pride. So what's the next demon? Ravana and Kumbhakarna. What was Ravana's qualification? Disqualification. What was his main? What was he? Lust. He was so lusty. He was thinking that all women are meant for me. Men think like that, even today. A man is real qualified, he's very handsome. If he has a lot of money, he has a lot of power, he thinks all women are meant for my enjoyment. He thinks like that. Right? And he uses his money and influence to try to enjoy all women. And he doesn't feel any limitation. If he wants to enjoy, that's his desire, so he does. So Ravana was like that. Ravana had so many wives. And so much money, so much wealth. But he wasn't satisfied. Because when you live by lust, lust is like fire. The more you feed it, the worse it gets. This is like, how to describe it. Prabhupada used the example that if you have an animal, such as a lion, and you don't feed it right away, what happens? It becomes real agitated. And then if you don't feel it for a little longer, then what happens? It starts to roar, shakes everything. It's so ferocious. But if you continue not to feed it, after a while it just becomes so weak, and it just becomes like a pussycat. So lust is like that. When we feed it, it goes down for a while. You think, oh, I'm okay. And then after some time it arouses up again, when it's not being fed. Then you feed it again. It's like adding fuel to a fire. You keep feeding it, the fire burns more and more and more. But if you don't feed it, at the beginning, it seems like it's getting worse. But what happens is ultimately, if you continue not to feed it, it disappears. Prabhupada said, it's like that. With anything, if you feed your lust, it gets worse. But at the beginning, when you don't feed it, it also gets worse. But if you go through that stage and ultimately tolerate it, then it actually, it goes away, not being satisfied. So, Ravana, he was so lusty. In fact, he had one of the most beautiful women in creation as his wife, Madhodari. She was considered to be a beautiful lady, a monk's lady. She was very sophisticated, very intelligent, highly qualified. But he wasn't satisfied. When he saw Sita, he had to have Sita. And after he captured Sita, his wife said, she said, "Well, you have so many wives. Why don't you let this Sita go? She's a wife of Ram." He couldn't understand it. He got good advice from his wife, from his brother Vibhishan. Vibhishan told him the same thing. This is the wife of another man. You have so much. Why do you want more? But he was so infatuated with lust that he could not think of not having Sita. So this is lust. It burns like fire. The more you feed it, the bigger it gets. So what happened, of course? Ram came and killed Rama. So he was destroyed by his own lust. Lust destroys. What was the next one? Kumbhakarna. Everybody likes Kumbhakarna. He was a personification of what quality? What is that called? There's six anarthas. Yeah, but what is that called? It's called mada, or madness, illusion. He was so much an illusion. What was the situation with Kumbhakarna? His birth is really interesting. And then he performed austerities and penances also at the time of his birth, and he got a benediction from Lord Brahma. And he was so powerful, and he would just eat everything in creation. Everything. He would just consume large amounts of flesh. He wasn't a vegetarian. He was just eating so much. Do you ever see new brahmacharis sometimes? Sometimes they can eat 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 plates of prasadam. It's like little Kumbhakarnas. So he was eating so much prasadam, so much flesh, that the demigods said, they went to Lord Brahma, they said, you gotta do something about this guy. He's going wild. So Brahma said, what can we do? So make him go to sleep. So Brahma put a curse on him that he would sleep 365 days a year. But his brother, Ramana, he thought this was unfair. So he went to Brahma and he pleaded to Lord Brahma, well, how can you make him sleep for 365 days a year? It's not fair. Right? So Brahma gave him a concession. One day a year he could wake up. And he could eat as much as he wanted on that one day and then go back to sleep for the other 364. So he was sleeping. He was lying in the cave in his sleep. And when Ravana was in trouble during the fight with Ram, he decided to wake up Kumbhakarna. But it wasn't time for that day to come. So they had a job trying to wake him up. So they sent all the soldiers, the Rakshasas came with their chariots and their clubs and all their weapons and horses and elephants. And they tried to wake up Kumbhakarna. He was a giant monster. He was like a monster. It says when he came, when he did become awake, he was towering over the city of Lanka. He was bigger than the city. He was such a monster. So he was sleeping in the cave. And they tried everything to wake him up. They blew trumpets into his ears. Nothing. They rode chariots over his body. Nothing. They got elephants and horses and they rode it over his body. Nothing. It was still fast asleep. And they got big vats of blood and fat and all kinds of human delicacies. And they put it by his nose. And they start beating him with iron sticks and pikes and clubs. And they finally, after beating him and running all these chariots and elephants over his body and getting all his blood by his nose, he gradually started to wake up. Sometimes you find in the morning when you try to wake up some brahmacharis from Mangalarti, it's like trying to wake up Kumbhakarna. Sleep is so nice, right? Don't disturb me. I'm enjoying the inside of my eyelids. So please allow me to keep this darshan of the inside of my eyelids. I enjoyed that much more than the beautiful form of Kishore. So sometimes we see, we would rather lay there in our dark room and sleep. Oh, so nice. It's like a form of sense gratification. It is. So finally he woke up. And when he woke up, immediately he was hungry. And so he started to consume these giant, giant vats of blood and fat and kinds of human delicacies. And finally he was so he finished his prasad. And then he went out to do his service. And of course, when he came onto the battlefield, God, the monkeys, when they saw Kumbhakarna, they started to run in fright. In fact, they all were running. And of course, Hanuman and Angad and Sugriva were trying to rally the monkeys. Because they were, when I saw him, they just became so fierce. He was such a monster. He was bigger than this city. And then he was, with one hand, he was just like scooping up all these monkey soldiers and just shoving them into his mouth. He was like chewing them and all his blood and fat was dripping down his face and he was like this hideous monster. He was just scooping up like hundreds of these monkeys at a time and sticking them in his mouth. And you know, the rest of the monkeys were wondering, wow, what a monster, and like running. So finally, of course, he came in contact with Lakshman. It was a big fight. And ultimately, Lakshman killed him. But here, it's explained, this is another anartha. It's called illusion or madness, personified by Kumbhakarna. And that the living entity becomes so illusioned by this material body that they think that sense gratification is the goal of life. They want to eat so much, they want to sleep so much, they want to take so much intoxication. They want to do so many things simply just to saturate their senses. They're not really enjoying it, but they're just doing it more and more and more. Sometimes they have these Guinness's Book of Records. You ever seen these things? It's like this little catalog you can buy in the store. And the person who can do the most in every category, like one man eats 75 cherry pies in one sitting or something like that. Yeah, it's like that. Where somebody can, it's like you do an outstanding, one of the things it is eating. You usually have somebody who can eat, just like we do in Krishna consciousness.
Gluttony eating contest. Have you ever been to a gluttony eating contest?
No. Never been to a gluttony eating contest? Sometimes devotees do that. I saw one last year in New Vrindavan. One devotee, without even blinking an eye, he was up to his 35th glumjan. I think he did 38 that day. With one sitting eating 38 glumjan straight. Imagine all that sugar water. God, it's like intoxicating. But of course, transcendental competition. But you find it. The living entity becomes so illusioned by this material body, trying to consume so much, sleep so much. Prabhupada says, yeah, in your country, people are accustomed to sleep 12 hours a day. Go to bed at midnight and get up at 12 o'clock the next day. Right? 12 hours. Oh, sleeping is so nice. Please don't disturb me. But the sign on the door, do not disturb. And if you wake somebody up, it's like maha aparad. Right? It's an aparad to disturb someone while they're sleeping. Whoa! Like the worst thing you can do. Sleeping is, everyone enjoy it. There's even a, those who are expert in the science of sleep have devised a way where you can, how you can enjoy how to sleep. There's a way of enjoying sleep. They've come up with a science. That the way, I shouldn't tell you this, when, as long as you, I'll tell you this as long as you don't do it. And that is that you can, the idea is you go to sleep and then you have somebody wake you up. And then you go back to sleep again. So the idea of waking up and going back to sleep is so nice. That's the enjoying part. You can go back to sleep again. Because when you're asleep, you're really not enjoying. Right? But when you're going to sleep, that's the enjoying part, right? So you have somebody wake you up so you can go back to sleep again. People are so mad after sense gratification. They're just trying to think of how to enjoy this body to its ultimate limit, right? So whatever you want to do, just do it to the end. You can't do it anymore. And then when you can't do it anymore, you take a break. And then do it again. There's one story where this one man, he eats so much food, and he's so stuffed, and he's sick. He goes to the doctor. He says, "Doctor, I'm so sick, I ate so much." And the doctor says, "Well, here's some medicine, please take it." And he says to the doctor, "You're giving me something else to eat? If I had more room, I would have ate another glutamate." This is an Indian joke. So this is the way it is. People are so mad after sense gratification. Okay, so that's illusion or madness. So what's the next one? There was two more left.
Dantavark
and Shishupal. What was the qualification of Shishupal? What was his anartha? Yeah, but what was that anartha? No. Matsarya. What is Matsarya?
Jealousy.
Jealousy, yes. Enviousness. He was so envious of Krishna that simply by hearing Krishna's name, he would start bashing and criticizing Krishna. When he was born, he was born with four arms. He had a divine birth. He was Krishna's cousin. And the first words that came out of his mouth were, "You rascal Krishna." That was the first word of the newborn baby. You know, when the baby born nowadays, all the mother says, "Oh, let's listen to the words, kaka, dada, mama." The parents are so eager to hear the first words of the child. "Oh, it's so cute," he said. "He said my name." No, he said my name. But at Shishupal, what happened? His first words were, "You rascal Krishna." That was his first words he said when he came out. He was so envious of Krishna. And so his mother, she took him to an astrologer. And the astrologer said, "When this child sees the person who will kill him, two of his arms will fall off." He had four arms. He was born with divine birth in one sense. So his mother was worried. So she decided, "Well, I'd like to have a nice little program for my baby, invite all the relatives to come over and see," just like they do that. Now, mothers are so happy to show the new baby off to everyone. So she invited all the friends, and she invited Krishna to come. Krishna says, "I'm not coming." Because he knew if he came, what would happen. So she said, "Oh, Krishna, you have to come and see my new child." That was Krishna's aunt. It was Krishna's cousin, Shishupal. So Krishna says, "I don't want to come. If I come, you're not going to like it." She said, "Oh, you must come. You're his cousin." So he came. So as soon as Shishupal saw Krishna, two of his arms fell off. So Shishupal's mother, she became shocked. He said, Krishna, you're going to kill my baby? Krishna says, I don't want to kill him. But he's so envious of me, he's just constantly blaspheming me. But I'll give him a benediction. The benediction is that he can blaspheme me 100 times straight. And if he can take a break, then he can start again. But if he goes past 100 without taking a break, then I have to take some action. So during the Rajasuya sacrifice from King Yudhisthira, Shishupal was the presiding person. And they were decided to elect the most important person to be honored for the Rajasuya sacrifice. Because in the Rajasuya sacrifice, honor is given to the most, it's called the best of all, the Purushottam, the best man there, the most honorable person. So unanimously, everybody wanted Krishna to be the person to be honored in this sacrifice. But Shishupal was so envious of Krishna, and when he heard Krishna's name, he became so angry, and he started to criticize and blaspheme Krishna. And many of the devas and the demigods, they were becoming angry at Shishupal. Some of them were drawing their weapons. They were ready to attack Shishupal. So Krishna was there, and he was counting when Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna. 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100, 101. Krishna took out his Sudarshan Chakra, simply cut the head off of Shishupal in front of everyone in the Rajasuya sacrifice. Everyone was shocked. But the reason why he did that is, of course, because the other soldiers, demigods, great persons, they were going to attack Shishupal. And Krishna knew if they did that, then this whole sacrifice would be spoiled. And King Yudhisthira's name would not be glorified around the world. So he decided to kill him himself. But what he did was, that when the Sudarshan Chakra cut off the head of Shishupal, it caught the blood falling from Shishupal's body before he hit the floor. Because even if one drop of blood was to hit the floor of the sacrifice, the whole sacrifice would have been desecrated. So the Sudarshan Chakra caught all the blood. Krishna saved it, killed Shishupal, the demon of envy. So who's the last one? Dantravarga. What was his main quality? Who knows? We had greed, pride, lust, illusion, enviousness. What's left?
Anger.
Krodha. He was so angry to hear that Shishupal, his best friend, was killed by Krishna, that he went out of his way to meet Krishna, and he saw Krishna, and he was so angry that he picked up his club, got off of his horse, and came charging at Krishna. Krishna knocked the club out of his hand. And then he was so angry, he didn't even stop to pick up his club. He simply charged Krishna, and it's explained in that narration, with his red-hot anger. He charged Krishna with his anger alone. He was so angry. And Krishna just punched him and hit him in the chest with his club and killed him. This was a quick job. The reason why Krishna killed Dantavarga so quick is because he was in a hurry. He had to go meet, I think it was Jarasandha. So he was on his way to somewhere, so he just dispatched Dantavarga real quick.
He didn't want to waste time with him. So he killed the demon of anger. So why am I bringing us these stories up? To show you that lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion, these are the things that are considered to be enemies of the devotees. These are the things that destroy or impede our spiritual life. Only Krishna can save us from these things. That's why these stories are there. We cannot overcome anger by ourselves. We cannot overcome lust. We cannot overcome pride. But by taking shelter of Krishna and by chanting Krishna's holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Demon, Krishna will come personally to kill the demons that are in our hearts and lives. His holy name is the weapon that kills all the inauspiciousness within this age. Only Krishna can do it in the form of his holy name. So when we are being affected by these things, Prabhupada says that at any time the mind can be attacked by lust, the mind can be attacked by anger, the mind can be attacked by pride, illusion, greed. Then we have to cry out to Krishna. And Krishna comes to give us the mercy in order to kill these demons within our hearts and minds. So this is an incarnation of the Lord too. Kali Kale, Amarupa, Krishna Avatara. Krishna has come in the sound vibration of his name. Any questions? Comments? Yes, Murari? The Mora demon? Do you know Raj Govind about the Mora demon? Mura demon? M-U-R-A. Mura. Yeah, that's his name. It's not you, don't worry. The Mura demon? Do you know Raj Govind about that demon? Because it's not mentioned so much. Does anyone know? The Mura demon? We have to ask Shankar Pandit. That's why he's called Pandit. Because he knows everything. I don't know so much. It's mentioned Krishna killed the Mura demon at the beginning of creation, I think. Krishna killed so many demons. That was one of the demons he killed. We'll have to postpone this answer to the future. Any other questions? Yes, Dr. Phil?
I just wondered how a person can get more faith in the scriptures. Is there like a method? Because sometimes the stories of, it's like the illusion comes in your mind that, you know, oh, that could never happen. You're just reading stories of this and that. Is it just from chanting? Is there a way you can get more
faith? Yeah. These stories are not fiction, they're fact. But they happen, most of the stories in Bhagavatam happen in the higher planets, not necessarily on this planet. And the way we get more faith and way of more understanding is through the process of devotional service, chanting the holy names. Chaito Dharpana Marjana, as the mind and heart becomes cleansed from all misgivings, and then knowledge and truth is revealed. But you have to understand one thing. There's very little we know about reality. Even in our spirit existence, it's very limited how much we actually know. Even doctors don't even know how this body's working, really. They know something. They know a lot. And they even know, even though our body's right here, this body is a mystery in many certain ways, how it operates, what it's made of. So we find that even in our existence from day to day, there's so much that we don't even know. What to speak about what's on this planet, what's beyond this planet. How can we understand what is beyond this planet? So to a person with little faith or with a materialistic conception, they see these stories as simply allegories of fiction that's in order to create some kind of devotional semblance. But actually they're facts. They're not. And the thing is that fact is stranger than fiction. It's an old saying. It's a fact. Just like, even on this planet, there's a place, I think it's called the Bermuda Triangle. There's a place near the Himalayan mountains that if a plane flies in that place, it disappears and nobody ever hears of it again. It just disappears somewhere in the range of the Himalayan mountains. There's many planes that don't go into that area because of other planes have gone. It just goes in there and nobody ever sees it or hears of it again. There's a lot of things you don't know. Strange things. So the higher realms, that's just the higher realms. What to speak of the spiritual world, which is even more amazing than the higher realms. So there's so much we don't know. There's so much. And in one sense, if you talk about something transcendental, you have to understand that transcendental means beyond the mundane, beyond the ordinary. If people who read these stories, they try to compare these things to their own experience. And if it doesn't fit into their own experience, they reject it. But ultimately, what is our experience? Again, it's limited. So that's why the people say, oh, you believe all that, it's just some story. But there, can you figure out how your body's working? How the food is assimilated, and how you're getting energy, and how digestion is working, and how the corpuscles are providing oxygen to the body? And doctors, every once in a while, scientists, they come up with some discovery about the human body, and they learn a little bit. But still, there's so much they don't know. So much they don't know. So even in our own day-to-day world, there's so much we don't know. Just like in this room. How many living entities are in this room now? Human beings, there's about 9 of us, right? But living entities, there's millions of living entities in this room now. If you could look, if I were to actually see what this water looked like, I wouldn't drink it. Right, doctor? If you could see what this water looked like, you wouldn't drink it. So many living entities floating in that thing. And so this room is full of so many microscopic bugs and germs. There's unlimited, and they're all spirit souls, too. So what is our experience? It's all very limited. Okay, so we have to have faith that scripture is coming from God. And God is perfect. We can't believe our senses. Atasi Krishna Namari Namavidraimindriya Seva Mukhi Jivado Svayameva Spadatyada. But the senses cannot reach to the transcendental realm. Only when they become purified through the process of devotional service can the senses understand what is beyond the senses, not before that. Just like, I'm giving an example. We look at another person and we become infatuated by someone's appearance. But what is that body we become infatuated with? The body is blood, pus, urine, stool, bone, marrow, and all kinds of foul substances, right? And then it's got a little tiny layer of skin over the top. And everyone's thinking, oh, how beautiful it is. But even if you analyze the layer of skin, you look at it under a microscope, it's got all these holes in it with all these hairs coming out of it. Right? This is the body. And everyone's thinking, oh, how nice it is. But really, it's quite abominable. Right? We put so many creams on it and so many ointments and lotions and sprays to cover up the odor. And, right? And all these aerosols. It's just, right? This is the material body. It's just a bag of foul substances. Little skin over the top, and everyone thinking, oh, this is so nice. this is called Maya. This is Maya. What's beautiful about the material body is the soul inside. That's what makes the material body beautiful. As soon as the soul is gone, that same beautiful body, who cares? Nobody likes it anymore. It could be a beautiful man or a woman. When the soul is gone, nobody likes it anymore. They just throw it in the street. Cars run over it. Dogs eat it. And the jackals have a feast. Same body. So we have to understand that this is Maya. So what we see is not really what it really is. The reality is that we have to understand things through scripture. When you understand through scripture, then you can understand what is reality. Okay. Anything else? Any last questions or comments on anything? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.